welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good.
CA-125, periodically, it comes up in the news. Lots of concern about ovarian cancer, but lots of unsettledness around CA-125 as a screening tool. It has been used and the subject of lots of investigations. It is perhaps important because ovarian cancer, what we often call epithelial ovarian cancer, because it occurs in epithelial tissue, is common. It's often diagnosed at a very late stage, which contributes to its poor prognosis. Symptoms of ovarian cancer are often present, but these symptoms are very nonspecific and don't usually result in a diagnosis at an early stage. And then we have difficulty differentiating between benign and malignant adnexal masses, which means that we have often surgery that takes place because we don't know, and it ends up being benign. We know that lymph node involvement or distant mets are present, unfortunately, about 80% of the time that ovarian cancer is diagnosed. And we know that the CA-125 biomarker has been around since 1983. There are dozens of CA-125 assays. They don't differ in their accuracy. The only thing to remember is that if you're going to use one assay, you have to use that same assay if you're following prospectively. You can't switch between assays. CA-125 in the literature has been reported to have a low sensitivity, particularly for early stage ovarian cancer, and a very low overall specificity, particularly in premenopausal women. It's no surprise if you think about that, because this low specificity of CA-125 is associated with many conditions beside ovarian cancer, and these are much more commonly found in young women of reproductive age. You found a poem. It was published in PLOS Medicine recently. I'm not going to say the computer code for it, but you can Google it or look on Essential Evidence. It attempts to answer the question, what is the diagnostic accuracy of CA-125 for women suspected of having ovarian cancer? Mark, anything new about this test?
Yeah, this was a good summary of sort of real-world data on using this in practice in the primary care setting. And I actually was at a meeting at Cold Spring Harbor on ovarian cancer screening and met a guy named William Bax. And it was a cocktail party before the meeting started. I said, so why are you at the meeting? And everybody looked at me aghast because he's the one that invented the CA-125 test. Uh-huh. I was like, sorry, I'm just a simple country doctor. I didn't know that. But right. Anyway, so the UK doesn't have a screening program for ovarian cancer. Actually, neither does any other country. But their national guidelines recommend CA-125 testing as the initial test in patients with symptoms that could represent ovarian cancer. So the authors assume that any CA-125 ordered in primary care in the UK was for women with symptoms that suggested ovarian cancer. So they looked at 3 years' worth of data, over 50,000 women who got a CA-125 test. Ultimately, 0.9% were given a diagnosis of ovarian cancer, and 2.6% were told that they had a non-ovarian cancer during the workup. Using the standard cutoff of 35 units per milliliter, 99.8% with a negative test did not have ovarian cancer. On the other hand, only 10% of women with a positive test had ovarian cancer. So the positive predictive value is 10% overall. If you have an abnormal test, only 3%, it's about 3% in women under 50 years. So women 50 years and older with a positive test, 20% had a diagnosis of a non-ovarian cancer within the 12 months following testing. So bottom line, in women with presumed non-specific symptoms that leads GPs to order a CA-125, a negative test result is reassuring and excludes cancer 99.8% of the time. But positive results are most likely to be false positives. And so that's important if you're using that as an initial test so that patients understand that probably it's not cancer, but we still need to follow it up. And that's especially true in women under age 50. I think it does raise the question for me of whether CA125 should be the initial test. And in general, in the U.S., Britain, that's done, I think, because it's less expensive than going directly to ultrasound. They may not have the capacity to do that. Here, generally, ultrasound is recommended as the initial test, or for women over 50, ultrasound plus CA125.
Interesting. It is obviously an important disease. And as I've mentioned, we tend to pick this up quite late. So anything that we can do to pick it up earlier is going to be helpful. It doesn't help with something on ultrasound that looks like a mass. Even if it's followed with a CA125, I suspect a lot of those women are going to end up getting some sort of laparoscopy or biopsy. But perhaps that's better than dying of ovarian cancer.
Yeah, it's a very bad cancer, and there was a huge the UKC tox trial was done in the UK and randomized 50,000 women to this special protocol that looked not only at the CA125, it actually customized the cutoff for an abnormal CA125 to the woman's baseline CA125. And it used other risk factors for ovarian cancer. Even that one was not able to find a significant reduction in mortality as a screening test. Now, I think the message for women is to be aware of symptoms, for physicians to take those symptoms seriously, and to do a proper evaluation for women that have vague abdominal or GI or GU symptoms. It's also, I didn't know this, but CA125, I primarily think of it with ovarian cancer, but it can be elevated with uterine, fallopian tube, pancreatic, breast, colorectal, and even lung or stomach cancer. So that's where some of those non-ovarian cancers come in.
Right. Just taking the primary care perspective here for a second, it's really difficult. So many patients come in with vague abdominal symptoms, and the differential is enormous. I mean, there's nothing that has a broader differential than vague abdominal symptoms. And yep. So, we do have to be a little careful that we're not ordering ultrasounds on everybody who comes in that way. And, the CA125, if it had been more useful, would be a wonderful, sort of assistant to help us figure out who really needs an ultrasound and who doesn't. Unfortunately, it's not there. So, but you're, yeah.
And I think maybe looking at the CA125, not just as a single cutoff, but there may be, and this research hasn't been done, but I would speculate that maybe looking at a CA125, perhaps less than 20 versus 20 to 35 versus greater than 35, there may be some ways to improve that negative predictive value and make it more useful as an initial test. But anyway,
we'll see. Great point. Thanks, Mark, for your advice. We will talk with you again in a week.
Sounds good. Talk to you, Mike.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.